Do you invest in ETFs? Whether you're thinking, what in the world is an ETF? Or you're looking for the next opportunity to add to your portfolio. GlobalX has you covered. From big tech to bonds and bars of gold, GlobalX offers a wide range of exchange-traded funds. Go beyond ordinary with GlobalX ETFs. Visit globalxetfs.com.au. That's globalxetfs.com.au.
Are you thinking about starting your wealth-creating journey, but not sure where to put your hard-earned dollars? InvestSmart can help. InvestSmart offers a free quiz that makes it easy to find the right InvestSmart ETF portfolio to help you reach your goals. Just visit investsmart.com.au and hit Get Started. Answer a few simple questions about your goals and how much you want to invest, and you'll get a tailored statement of advice with a portfolio recommendation. You can visit investsmart.com.au for a no obligations free statement of advice. This ad is brought to you by InvestSmart Advice, AFSL 334107.
Hey there, here's a quick note. This podcast contains general financial advice only. That means it's not specific to you, your needs, goals, or objectives, so don't act on the information until you've spoken with your financial advisor. You'll find our full disclosure, disclaimer, and link to our financial services guide in the show notes.
Drew, how you doing?
Very well. Good to be back. Escaped captivity. Is that where I was? Or I've been abducted by the Federal Reserve?
You did get hit by a vehicle, and we did have some concerned listeners write in. Are you okay?
I had one or two, yeah. What was it? The Chairman Powell's?
It was Chairman Powell's Cadillac that hit when you were in New York last week. Yeah.
Yeah, alive and well. Had the second week of school holiday, so it was a long week, but an incredibly enjoyable week.
Oh, that's good, mate. Good. Spend some time with the kids and do all those types of things.
Definitely.
Yeah. Cool, man. Cool. So we've got Apple headphones that we haven't charged. How much of a premium can Apple charge for its products? Like, let's say a pair of headphones like these ones right here. How much?
200-300%. Same as Good One.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Same as Good One. Well, these are about, I think they were about 60% more expensive than the next most expensive.
That makes sense.
I don't want to reveal that.
They're not always better, though. That's the problem.
Yeah. These are definitely better. These Apple AirPods Max are wonderful headphones if you're into that sort of a thing. They're not actually mine. I'm just borrowing them and I haven't charged them, hence why there's a cable attached to it. But if anyone that's not listening, we will be talking about investing in just a moment. Upcoming this next month, that is the next month of May 2024, the ASA, the Australian Shareholders Association, who you know and love because you're a member or because you listen to their podcasts and their guests come through this channel, is hosting an event in Melbourne, I think it's pronounced. That's in the state of Victoria. You can get tickets through RASC, cheap, and they're hosting a very unique format this year, which is a Sunday afternoon. There's a value investing workshop with me. The same workshop that people have done through our website, we'll be doing in person, and you get the online course for free if you come to the ASA event. And there's a standard two-day conference as well at the ASA event. I think, Drew, you are presenting there.
Yeah, I think we're on a panel discussing retirement and the release of that book.
Yeah, cool. Golden Years.
I thought value would
get it right. Don't you dare.
Like fundamental analysis, I'm guessing, not just value, finding value stocks.
Not just low PE equals buy. I think there's a question around that dogs of the Dow type
course
stuff.
Done, right? That's it.
Of course, done. Don't even bother. You just got the lesson right there. But seriously, you can come along, catch up with us, have a coffee, learn something. I'll be sharing a lot of things around value investing, all the things that I teach in the course and have taught around the country. You can get it in person with about 40 other people. And then that evening, there is also some drinks and people will be making some presentations. There's about 150 people coming to that. So that'll be wonderful. That's on the Sunday night. And the reason that I help to encourage the ASA to put it on a Sunday. So for folks that are working during the week and you can't get to an event, this is a wonderful way to feel part of it. Come say good day to me. I'd love to see you all in person. So that's in May. It's around about the 19th from memory. Pardon me. Come along. It's going to be heaps of fun. Drew probably won't be there on the Sunday, but we'll be there throughout the week. I'll be there throughout the week. It's going to be a heap of fun. So tickets are discounted. Get in while you can. We can only sell 40 tickets through RASC because SA has already filled up all the rest. So come along. Anyway, that's the housekeeping for this week. What have you been working on?
Oh, a bit of everything. Reporting season is around again as it comes around very quickly in the US every quarter. I had a few kind of fun meetings with a few different groups and a couple of hypothetical questions for you too, as we always do. Been working on my dad jokes and my singing in my week off as well. All dad jokes will be delivered by singing.
Drew, there's a bit of mine, I know this, but Drew did in his first degree, he did singing, and the second one was financial planning. Yep. So that's where the skill comes from.
Voice of an angel, apparently, and face to radio. And what I'm not sure you've been keeping up with the Coles Woolies Senate inquiry. You've been watching that?
There's probably. I was going to ask you, what is your return on equity?
Part of your value investing program was covered in the Senate inquiry this week.
But what is your return on equity? Like, if you could you tell me what your return on equity of Wattle Partners is? 3, 2, 1, go.
No. I mean, we're a private business. We're not selling it. We have to justify to ourselves as shareholders. What's my return on equity? Probably my salary.
Yeah.
Only if I get a bonus. We don't drum down that much to imagine. Probably doesn't sound good to be on this and not looking at our own business on ROE perspective. But when you're in it for the kind of long term, we're worried about, you know, revenue growth, making sure we've got more than enough resources and capacity to support all the clients that are joining us and the clients we already have as well, and still adding value. So, you know, that's why most consumer-facing businesses look for things like net promoter score, like Woolies. I think I'm doing a Brad Banducci answer here, aren't I? They look at like net promoter score. So are your clients happy or your customers happy more so than, you know, the shareholder outcome on the other side?
Yeah.
That was an incredible kind of conversation, wasn't it? Politician asking to discuss a return on equity.
Yeah, it's one of those things where they knew the answer would be provocative, right? 26% is the answer, or thereabouts. It's about 27. If you are playing along at home, you're a Woolworths shareholder. That is your return on equity. I don't know. What did you? I watched
banking sector. So it'd be because the ROE is twice banking sector, but the banking sector has to hold capital for every loan that it makes, so it's never going to have significantly high ROE.
So what did you, so that RO, like if we zoom out of the whole thing, because it's quite interesting, like you would get, like if you want to do engagement on your social media channel, Drew, I know you're big on that, talk about Woolworths and you'll get some craziness coming in your feeds.
I've had conversations with my dad in the kitchen about Woolworths as well.
So. Oh, really?
he has a farm, so, you know, he produces meat or cattle and sheep on one side. So you see how much you sell it to someone for, and then how much it costs at the other end when it gets to Woolies as well. Or not just Woolies and Coles and Aldi and all the others. Don't just say one. I don't want to be careful there. But it is, I think you just naturally see this, like when the oil price and the coal price and iron ore price were doing incredibly well, the political focus comes onto those sectors, put special taxes on them. And particularly, this is probably more relevant because it directly impacts people's cost of living. When how much they're buying on groceries. So all this started because grocery prices were going up during the last 2 years. But mainly, I mean, a lot of it was because all the costs associated with getting the groceries to the shelf were going up. Not justifying it in either case, but that's where this came from. And I think there's like 10 inquiries about this across the country at the moment.
Wow. I guess if you're trying to win political points, one of the wonderful things is, yeah, you just pick on something that no one really understands and make it sound scary.
Grocery retailers, 60% of the market.
Well, I think if you're trying to build your own brand as an individual, here's some marketing advice from someone who named their company after themselves. So if you're trying to pick a fight with someone who can't win. Because think about it. Every time someone goes to the checkout, they hate Woolworths and Coles because they're the ones that they pay. Yep. They don't know that their profit margins are like 2.6%. Like their actual profit margins are so thin. Like not even a razor blade would fit through. Like it is so thin. But
I have to have made so much revenue to make any profit.
Yeah. And so that's an easy one to fight.
Use big numbers.
Use big numbers, like law of large numbers, make people a bit bamboozled. Billions. Yeah. Pick financial jargon that no one understands. Well, most people don't understand unless you actually want to understand it, which is return on equity. If they did return on capital, it'd be a horrible number. It'd be really low and it wouldn't have made the point for the senator. And you do those things where people also incur or feel pain. So most people are feeling pain at the checkout. Most people are feeling pain with their mortgage. And finally, if they can't fight back, meaning that the businesses can't fight back because they can't, they're not going to fight back. It's such an easy way to win points. I mean, we see this. Oh, yeah. The RAS political podcast is coming soon. But seriously, like, so, like, you'll see a lot of people across all industries, like, they might have a vendetta out against saturated fats, right? And that's what they stand for. And it sounds really good because saturated fats aren't great for us. We know that. But the saturated fats aren't going to fight back. You can fight against the big banks because the banks can't fight back. And so I just think it's farcical. I think it's a joke. I think all of that stuff that we've seen this week is just political positioning and posturing. I think our supermarkets are actually a really wonderful system. And I think there is competition. I think there's some things they could do better. But I think for the most part, we have a pretty good system. That's it.
Case closed,
mate. I think I'm in the mood for just getting a bit of negative feedback, shall we say, because I said something similar on one of our other podcasts last week about hex debt and people did not like that whatsoever. So,
you know, companies to invest in. You know, I mean, everything you look for, and you probably do this in your value investor program, everything you look for is someone that has a good share of market, not necessarily a monopoly, but they've got an oligopoly. They control about 65%. But they invest in price is what they call it. And that's where you can get increasing the amount of things they're doing in home brand, which is significantly cheaper. And which I assume that's where they're kind of making more of their profit because they're producing at a lower cost or buying at a lower cost and selling at a lower cost as well. But yeah, I think there's going to be a focus, I think, for the next few years of breaking market power a little bit in multiple sectors. But you could go, I think Chris Kohler had a post, if you remember that, where he went through, there's like four banks. There's three insurance companies that dominate the market. There's one toll road that owns basically everything. And there's a lot of different fights that can be picked all around market power and pricing power.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't know why you want to invest in these companies too.
Yeah, but let's not forget that Woolworths is a public company, meaning it's not owned by any one individual. It's on the stock exchange. It's owned by the Australian public.
Everyone pretty much owns it. Yeah. Being one of the top 10 largest companies in Australia would be
Australian Super, Host Plus, Cbus,
Vanguard.
Vanguard. Well, this is the thing. People say Vanguard. I was at my barbershop a few weeks ago, stopped going there because there was too many conspiracy theories. And one of them was that
had nothing to do with our hairlines, did it?
No. Your hairline, mine's just vanishing from all of these things that I hear and I just pull my hair out. I was sitting next to someone in the I was in the barber seat and someone sitting next to me. They're like, God, have you heard of BlackRock and Vanguard? They control 40% of all businesses. I was thinking to myself, oh my God. Obviously, Vanguard and BlackRock and iShares and the index funds and all that, they don't actually control the stock market. They're just holding the shares on your behalf.
And the custodians as well, yeah.
You say
sorry for these groups. They're just proxies.
Yeah, they just hold it for you. Otherwise, you'll have to create your own technology and your own bank accounts to go and hold that stuff. So it's just bizarre how people get lost in this. No one's really interested in the detail. It's just the story is more important than the story is more important than the reality. There was actually a wonderful quote that I came across this week. I think it was from a few hundred years ago, Drew, but I'll just read it out. It was, where was it? If you would persuade someone, speak to interest and not to reason. So basically, if you want to persuade someone, just speak to whatever is in their interest. So if you want to be a politician, whatever works for them, not because it's logical, not because it's true, it just makes sense to choose ROE. So
it's like show me the incentives or show you the action, isn't it? Or show you the behavior.
Yeah. yeah, that's it. And that's all this is. So who knows what will happen with Woolies and whatever. I don't own shares. Do you own shares for disclosure?
Woolies is in our, I don't own them, but they're in our one of our core portfolios, yeah.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, I mean, I probably own it through Vanguard. I've got Australian Super account as well, so I'm sure there's some sprinkling of Woolworths in there somewhere. Not that they would tell me.
BOQ came out as well, so the Bank of Queensland. It all looked bad news, but the stock price popped. Maybe you can explain to me that, why you can deliver 30% fall in profit, dividend cut, ROE falling to 5.8%, net interest margin shrinking, but the share price popped.
Well, expectations versus reality, Drew.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a classic case of this. Instagram versus reality. It's kind of like you expect something horrible and you turn up and it's actually not as bad as you first thought. So you're like, that's pretty good. That's an upside surprise. You know?
Yeah, I mean, just showing how tough it's getting. Like the banking sector, I think we talked about a few weeks ago, has been smashing, you know, driving the ASX higher to an all-time high, but mainly through multiple expansion, not through profit growth. And this is kind of another example. So Bank of Queensland, and they've got a different issue to the big banks, that their cost of capital has been going up. So their margins being more than the major banks. So their margins being shrunk. And I think they said something around, our way out of this isn't just growth by making more loans. Because if your ROE is only 5.8%, making more loans doesn't necessarily help that. And their costs keep going up as well.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. It's the profit number might get bigger if you're doing more loans, but your profitability percentage that you make on each loan goes down. But the banks, the regional banks like BOQ and Bendigo and these types of businesses, as you know, Drew, they have a structural disadvantage in that they have to account for their assets or their loans a different way to the major banks.
Yep.
And Macquarie for that matter.
So they can't make as many loans with the same amount of capital.
Exactly. So they're structurally disadvantaged. And that was because of the old, was it the four pillars policy back in the day where we did see the big banks try and use that power to gobble up other businesses, but then the government determined that they shouldn't be allowed to do that anymore and we'll just keep it as it is and kind of strengthen the four pillars for big banks. Ultimately, both in banking and in supermarkets, we actually have quite good competition. Like in supermarkets, we've obviously got Aldi entered the fray. Costco is kind of there in the peripheries. We've got Metcash, which owns IGAs and supplies independence. Obviously, they can't compete with the distribution channels of Woolworths and Coles just yet, but Aldi is doing a fantastic job and makes a lot of money. It's got really good profit margins. There's some, because Aldi, just so everyone is aware, Aldi is a private business. Here in Australia, you don't get the exact same amount of financials as you would from Woolworths or Coles. You don't get the disclosure. But some of the stuff that has surfaced has been pretty compelling for Aldi having pretty good profit margins. And you're like, how does it get such good profit margins, probably better than Coles and Woolworths, when it offers cheaper products? You know, that's a question people need to unravel.
Yeah, I think the profit margins are better. And it means they can do it with less volume because they only have, I think, 5 or 10% of the market, whereas Woolies and Coles have 60. They need a much higher volume, so much more product going through to make the same level of not the same level. I know the profit levels are very different, but by contrast, a lot more volume, which is, and they're a late-ish entrant, but they've been here for over a decade now.
Yeah, they've done very, very well. These two industries, both banking and supermarkets, are actually very competitive, which is good for consumers. And in particular, in the banking scene, it's really, let's just double click on that. You said that the share prices are going up, but that's because their valuations are getting stretched. It's not because they're making huge amounts of profit. Yes, you might see the absolute number go up, but what we're actually seeing in banking is actually we're seeing a lot of competition. And probably one of the reasons is because of mortgage brokers. Mortgage brokers making it more competitive. Banks have to price their loans in the right way. Otherwise, the mortgage broker will switch the client, which is really good for consumers yet again. And so we're actually seeing that for mortgage broking at the moment, we're actually seeing that the discount that people can get on a home loan isn't that significant. Whereas say like 3 or 4 years ago, it wasn't as much competition. So it's been really interesting to see that evolve over time. What else is making news, Drew?
I was going to ask you, I've been doing a bit of work on our model portfolio and some write-ups and research. What is your favorite? There's going to be a very exotic one here. Favorite fixed income ETF?
Probably IAF.
just the core composite bond.
Yeah, composite bond.
iShares, composite bond, mainly government bond, a little bit of corporate in there.
Yeah, I like V-Bond as well, VBND. Those are two just for government bonds. They're pretty fun. I like Sub-D for subordinated debt from VanEck. Yeah, I could go on. What about you?
I took a bit of a look at IYLD. So not IYLD.
IYield.
Yeah. Which is Aussie investment grade corporate debt excluding the big four. Because naturally, big four dominate the corporate debt market. I think it's only been around for 12 months or 18 months or so, maybe longer. But was doing some work on that today. And it kind of, when you look at how you build a portfolio, being able to add kind of a niche sleeve within there. So if you buy IAF, VBND, which are in most cores, including ours, that's a nice government exposure core. But, you know, if you don't like the banks for fixed income, where else do you go? I think it's yielding about 4% at the moment as well.
Yeah, it's, yeah, let's just get into some bond metrics, shall we?
I know. Low duration.
Running yield. Oh, jeez. Look at this running yield of 4.67.
Not bad.
4.7.
Not bad.
Duration of only 1.3.
So duration 1.3, it means it's likely more floating rate securities rather than fixed rate, which means if interest rates increase unexpectedly, then your capital is not going to fall as much.
This is quite interesting, mate. Thank you for putting this on my radar. I might actually look at this with the team. And you can see the biggest holdings inside of the ETF.
Got my engine going.
Toyota Finance Australia. Got your engine going. Suncorp Network Finance Company. Ausgrid. Lloyds Banking Group. Bank of Queensland. AGA Finance. So there's a lot of names that you wouldn't associate with, say, like a hybrid securities ETF or a one of those typical funds that you see in Australia. That's cool. I like it, mate. Well done. Good pick. Low management fee, 0.12. Happy times. As they would say, good times.
And I wanted
what else?
Follow that up with the most misunderstood word in finance or financial terms. So we, really? I have a. That's too easy. Are you prepared for this one? You saw my notes. This is why I don't put my notes in the beginning.
What about you?
And why is that? Because risk is different things to different people.
Yes, and because academics got in charge of something and they said that they could measure it based on. The numbers going up and down, and they call it volatility, which doesn't make any sense.
I'm going to go simple here and just go bonds. I still don't think people really understand bonds. I helped with some papers that were trying to explain what a high yield bond is, and it's literally a loan to another person or party that's a bond. Why would you do that? Because you've got security over what's going to be returned to you at the end, and you get paid in the meantime.
My word is my bond.
Yeah, it's still, or platforms, maybe that. I mean, every word I say most of the day could be the most misunderstood word in finance.
No, I would say that. There was a study that came out last year, wasn't there, I think it was the AFR, if I'm sorry if I'm throwing them under the bus, but there was a story that came out that effectively said there was only like 1% of people could explain what yields were.
The way they
or something.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, something like that, yeah. Which would make sense. Like most financial advisors can't explain it, to be honest. So like they can explain that, but they probably can't explain some of the other metrics. No offense to them. It's just that they've got other things to focus on and it's quite a confusing topic. The other thing that I'll double click on with risk is I think risk is actually one of those things where it's quite personal. It's like, what is ethical investing? Well, ethical investing is investing according to your ethics. And everyone has different ethics. I think everyone has a different definition of risk because of what we're trying to achieve is quite unique. The academics tried to say, well, if an investment goes up one day and down the next, and there seems to be no reason for that, we'll call that volatility because we can't explain it effectively. So, and there is some tenuous link between things going up and down and how people behave. But the reality is risk is something that everyone does. I think if I could just one final thing on this with risk in particular is... A lot of people that invest money should know that risk is not something that you avoid. It's something that you manage. And I think once you make that transition, you'll understand that there's risk in everything we do, getting in the car, you know, investing our money. But it's something that you manage and something that you try to be aware of. And that's about it. Do you have any other hypotheticals for me, mate?
No, it was more this concept coming up quite regularly now. It's in the papers a bit, which is non-bank lending.
Mm-hmm.
Have you done any sessions on that? Like, what is non-bank lending? Why and how does it work? And why are people investing in it? You know, credit's incredibly popular at the moment. And it's this whole sector. I think it's less than 5% of the market in Australia. But
the idea that not everyone can get money from a bank, businesses, or self-employed people, and non-bank lending is basically, they used to call it shadow banking, I think, which kind of sounds like it's, you know, murky and dangerous, but massively growing sector. I'm sure you've done a bit on it as well. That's kind of come up in a lot of questions and client discussions this week.
I think anything that's not really like government bonds, so you just mentioned the bonds are quite difficult for people to understand.
And there you go, non-bank.
Then you go, it's like a bond, and you're like,
So it's
one of those things where people get quite confused, but it is a very popular part of the market, and particularly because the big banks in Australia have been pulling back from those non-cookie cutter type lending that they do. I think that's quite interesting in terms of there's a huge opportunity for managed funds, so fund managers, maybe even some listed investment companies in the future, those types of products to invest in that part of the market. I was chatting to one of our investors the other day, and he has an investment. He is the credit provider for a mortgage over a single house.
Yeah.
So he's in a syndicate, like someone arranges that for him, but then he invests, say, you know, $200,000-$300,000. He's got a security over that individual property, that residence, and there you go. The bank didn't need to lend that person money; he did. So it's interesting, really interesting.
It's a growing sector.
Do you use it in portfolios?
Not a lot at the moment. A lot of non-bank lending outside of the big ones. I'm sure you've talked about Metrics, or people have asked questions about Metrics before. They'd be one of the biggest non-bank lenders. A lot of them are sophisticated, but there'd be groups like La Trobe, I'm sure who everyone would have seen advertising Collingwood Football Club or something. They're kind of the big end of town in non-bank lending, but a lot of it is more wholesale and sophisticated investor driven, like you're talking about, but still diversified.
We might get our La Trobe on the podcast in the next few months. So watch this space. One of the things people probably aren't aware of is that through our partnership with ASA, we get to interview a lot of great fund managers, CEOs, and those types of things through the ASA because we help them and represent them in that context. So hopefully, I think La Trobe is one of the sponsors of the upcoming ASA event, which is great news for the ASA and for La Trobe. So hopefully they'll appear on the podcast in the next little while too. All right, Drew, we've got some questions to get to, should probably get to them. So we got wonderful questions this week, so many of them indeed. And as a reminder, we don't know your personal circumstances, needs, goals, or objectives. So please don't give it to them. Please don't give any of that stuff to us in the question. And keep the name a bit of a funny one. When you send your questions in, you can do that one of two ways now. You can send your question to us via the link in the show notes that says ask a question, which is the typical way to do it. But going forward, you will also be able to get your questions onto the show potentially by going to the RASC community, which has started to roll out. And so this is a community for like-minded investors, and you can just go. It's free to join, and you can post your question there, and you can get feedback, or you can give someone else feedback on a topic that they're thinking about. And so we'll randomly pull some questions from the community each week as well. But this week, we're keeping it simple. These are the people that have sent in their questions via the link in the show notes. And you've given us some funny names. Some of them I will probably struggle to pronounce. And don't forget, if you need to get the advice of a licensed and trusted professional who can take into account your needs, goals, or objectives, you can get in contact with a financial advisor, like say Drew here, or whoever's in our show notes that says financial planning. You can click on that and get matched to a financial planner. Get financial advice from someone if you are confused about anything that we talk about today. The said, new to the investing scene, but been interested for years and read some books and followed the basics, etc. I believe in passive investing as an ETF method, as this is the easiest way through the murky waters. But a small percentage, let's say 5%, are useful, I like this phrase, exploratory investments, small caps or higher risk. What are the biggest warning signs when investing in small caps? For reference, my main target areas for small caps when looking to invest are minimal debt and scalability versus demand. Cheers, guys. I love this question. We have answered similar questions in the past, but I'm glad they've kind of taken the first two answers away from it, Drew, which is minimal debt and scalability. So they're basically looking for businesses that are not probably like in heavy manufacturing. They're probably not looking at businesses in mining. They're looking at businesses that can scale. So maybe they've got a bent towards technology or healthcare or something like this, or digital type businesses. What else should people be looking at, Drew?
I mean, it depends on your... Oh, damn it. depends on your risk profile, doesn't it? Because there's that many, you know, I talk to a lot of people from Western Australia, and there's that many like mining companies and things that are exploring and, you know, don't have cash flow, but have the great potential, like Pilbara would have fallen into one that you probably wouldn't touch. But at some point,
Pilbara.
Come on, mate. yeah. WA. Pilbara.
Yeah. Australia in your head.
Yeah. Derby. Sorry. Don't get that one wrong either. But it's incredibly broad. This is why a lot of the time we outsource small cap and micro cap to invest into an active fund manager, because they've got the ability to do a lot more research. And a lot of these, doesn't mean you can't do it yourself, but you almost have to narrow down the companies that you're looking for to the point that you can know that company better than other people. In terms of Australia, because it's very different overseas, it's kind of finding those... I think you just have to find businesses that have real and good products or services that people actually want. Sounds easy. But we live in a global world, and there's a lot of businesses that, say, have an idea in Australia that's a burgeoning idea, but which US global competitors are already running, and it has very little hope of competing with those. So it has to be established. It can be manufacturing, it can be tech, and with real customers. This is my risk profile anyway. I don't want to be betting. I don't want to be chasing momentum. I want something that's actually delivering at the moment.
Yeah, good point. I'd say one of the things is knowing who owns a business. There was a good comment, a good thread on Twitter the other day from Xavier Helgeson. I hope I pronounced that correct. From Xavier, we'll stick with that, who talked about, and thanks to Mark Tobin for flicking this across to me. So we talked about basically who owns a company. So smart backing. So you want to know who owns the company and what's their incentive. Like, they've got a pretty poor track record. You can find the shareholder register at the back of a company's annual report. You just go top 20 shareholders at the back. As it relates to that, I would also want to know if there's founders or insiders involved. So people that started the business, people that have significant skin in the game, and I'd want to know their track record. So I'd go back and see where they were before, what was the outcome, et cetera. As a risk mitigation strategy. There's a lot more that we could cover, Woodchuck. If you jump into the RAS community and ask the same question, I'll send you all the resources that I have. But broadly, there was a wonderful conversation that we had with Mark Tobin and I think it was Andrew Page on the Australian Investors Podcast, going back about 3 or 4 years now, and they talked about some of the factors that they look at, Andrew Page being the founder of Strawman. Mark being the founder of Coffee Microcap. So go and check that out. It's a wonderful thing. And we've also got a wonderful podcast with Joe Mager from back in the day, which might be very interesting to you. Can the professor avoid It Depends? In his answer says, I have been a member of Rask Invest since the early 90s. That's why I laughed before, because I knew when you said It Depends, you were looking at the next question thinking, I can't say It Depends. I congratulate you for your success in building your business, multiple podcasting reputation. Thank you, the professor, avoid It Depends, in his answer. I really appreciate that. It appears that inflation will stay higher for longer and central banks may delay any interest rate reduction. The magnitude of interest rate drops may also be less true. How does this affect the investment strategy of investors who aim to retire within the next 5 to 10 years? I'm going to just cue something here. So this person, he or she, we'll just call them the professor, is saying that it looks seemingly likely now that interest rates won't fall as far as maybe everyone had expected or as quickly.
Seemingly likely.
Yeah. Maybe probably. So what can investors do if interest rates don't fall as quickly? We already mentioned, or you already mentioned, the IYLD, which is an ETF that effectively... this is an ETF that has floating rates, so meaning that it goes up and down with interest rates effectively, and it's not as impacted. What else can people do, Drew?
Nothing.
Just stay the course.
No, I mean, there's two answers here. One is what investments are better suited to that, you know, sustained higher rate environment, and two is how do you construct a portfolio in the first place?
and the way we do it and what we see our role as. And I always get laughed at when I say fiduciary.
Fiduciary.
Yeah, that's when Jerome Powell comes out. But our obligation is really to build a portfolio that is resilient to different events happening. So we're not tilting our client portfolios to the fact that rates are going to fall. We're not loading up on the stocks or companies or assets that will benefit from that. We're building one that's set up for multiple outcomes and can perform in multiple conditions. It did well last year, but it wasn't full of tech, if that makes sense. Had enough tech, but wasn't full of it. And so my broader question is, you shouldn't have to change your strategy too much as long as you were tilted to this one outcome. And I think this, and you see, this is the problem with, you know, the bond market, which is where everyone looks at for predictions of what's happened, can happen to interest rates. If the bond market or the yield curve is inverting or falling, people predict that interest rate, they say that the market is predicting that interest rates are coming, but it's not necessarily predicting that at all. We've probably said a few times that interest rate cuts don't come just to kind of rebalance the economy or to adjust and help out. They usually come in chunks. And when something bad happens, it's not just, oh, we think it's 25 bips lower than what it was yesterday. Mm-hmm. That was a long answer to the first question. And the second one is, what investments are better suited to those conditions? So if you think inflation is going to be higher, then you want companies like Woolworths, like Coles.
Frankemar's
a perfect example. You know, the Brambles, the ones with pricing power. That's why Boral and Adelaide Brighton and CSR have all been taken over at the same time. You want companies with pricing power that can pass on higher costs to their consumers. In your fixed income, you probably want to blend both floating. Like in the last 2 years, you probably wanted more floating because interest rates were increasing, your income was going to increase. But if you don't think interest rates are going to continue increasing or much, then you probably want to have a balance between floating and fixed. So floating rate securities help. It's probably less dividend paying stocks for income. This is not saying you shouldn't hold dividend paying stocks, but if rates are going to be higher, you can still get 4 to 4.5% from term deposits. Well, it makes sense to be holding more of that than it does in dividends in the short term anyway. They're just the off the top of my head investments that are better suited to that kind of condition.
I like it, mate. I would say have more floating rate bonds in your portfolio, maybe just a little bit more. So this is where you'd have ETFs similar to what Drew was talking about before, or the sub-D ETF, SUBD from VanEck. These are the types of ETFs that benefit as interest rates go up because they don't fall in price. Their yield goes up, but they tend to move up with the market, but they also move down. You could also just own shares, really. Shares is one of these things that will continue to benefit. If you have pricing power, you could use quality ETFs like Qual, QLTY, these types of things. You can just keep money in cash. That's a pretty good one. Cash is a pretty good asset in times like this. So there's a lot you can do. And I think if someone was looking for retirement, the reason why I started with talking about the bonds and the cash and these types of things is because if you're thinking about that, you know, you want to be a lower risk investor going forward, well, you know, that's an easy way to do it. We've probably got time for two more questions here, Drew. I might jump down to Super Rascal. Writes in and says, superannuation is often the largest investment outside of a home for those that have one. Super curious as to why you explain and name specific ETFs, but not specific super accounts that represent low fees, focus on the long-term returns, and have performed well over time. P.S. Love all the podcasts. That's right. We do have 4 podcasts. Thank you, Super Rascal. And a live show that's coming back soon, Drew.
Doing excellent.
Yeah. Superannuation, Drew, generally speaking, is it a good thing for people to be putting money into as they think about their future?
Yeah. It depends. Well, this is part of the reason I couldn't make it last. So we launched our book last week too. We've had quite a lot of people reaching out looking for copies of it. I think it's on shelves now.
I took a photo yesterday in Sydney Airport. Yeah.
Yeah. One of the chapters in there is basically what you should do in your 30s, 40s, 50s, and 60s looking towards retirement. So superannuation, once you while you're not retired and not drawing a pension, you pay 15% earnings tax on it.
and 15% contributions tax on some contributions and no contributions tax on the other ones. But once you get into retirement, tax-free income, tax-free drawing out of it, and all the earnings into tax-free, it just makes sense as the primary source of retirement capital for pretty much everyone.
Cool. Like it. Now, as to why we don't talk about it a lot, it's we kind of do, particularly on our Australian Finance podcast. A lot of the people that listen to this show, Super Rascal, will have self-managed super funds. And typically the reason that they use self-managed super funds is so that they can invest in ETFs or manage funds, or their financial advisor, like say Drew here, would do that for them.
Yeah.
Now, as for industry funds, we talk about them a lot. We talked about insurance last month, and it was a wonderful episode with Phil Thompson and James O'Reilly. Superannuation plays a great role in terms of insurance as well. But to be honest, the superannuation system is a wonderful thing. And we have no beef against super. Mentioning super, we are authorized to do that. But some of the big industry funds have done a wonderful job through their balanced options, even through their index options. Typically what you can do, Super Rascal, for anyone that isn't aware, is you don't have to have a full self-managed super fund to get some control. You can log into your member portal. You can choose to buy some ETFs through some super funds. You can allocate to a strategy of your choosing. Some of the big super funds allow you to do that through their member direct options, or what they call their light options. They do cost though, so just keep that in mind. But it's a good question, and we do like to see people adding money to super. For the 100th time this month, the concessional contribution limit is going up from July 1st to $30,000 per year.
I think so, one thing there is that, as well, industry, the problem with us talking about them is we can only really compare on fees and performance. There's not a lot of transparency in knowing what they're doing inside that portfolio, so it's hard for us to analyze and have more than a kind of high level view on those.
Someone asked a question about waterborne asbestos contamination. Might leave that for
we'll pass that to the originator.
Well, next one. Okay, I'm gonna end with this fun question of dingoes of the Dow, and they talk about they say Drew cannot wait for the golden years. I don't know if they mean the book that you've just
I reckon this is the winner for the week too.
Yeah, if you have written into us, is there still some copies of the book in the office, mate?
Yeah, I've got this laptop in a box.
On a box, okay. So if you did get your question on the show, don't forget to write into us. You can actually write straight to Drew at drew@wattlepartners.com.au and ask for a copy of the book to be posted to. He'd be more than happy to do that. So dingoes.
I've got someone on LinkedIn who couldn't find it. He's going away on Monday, so I'm trying to send it to him today.
Okay, so Dingoes of the Dow, you can pick up a book from Drew himself, or you can get a copy from your nearest bookshop. We also will have, for anyone that is interested in any of the Major Street publishing titles, Rask has been given a particular link that will give you a discount on certain books under that publisher, so keep an eye in the show notes for that. Dingoes of the Dow says, Drew, cannot wait for the golden years. I've really taken on board your advice to have both of everything, stocks and bonds, active and passive, ASX and international growth and income. I also have good and bad stock picks.
Don't we all?
While I am joking about choosing some stocks that have gone down, is there actually an idea here to deliberately choose bad stocks for a balanced portfolio? So
just talk to Owen and I. We do it all the time.
So should I actually try to buy some of those shitty stocks for diversification and to have both, as you say, i.e. good and bad stocks in my portfolio? Drew, over to you.
No. I don't think anyone wants to buy bad stocks.
That's the most conviction you've had all year.
You didn't even know. There was no intense. Yeah. Just follow what I pick. So I've just got, maybe it's because for the core of my portfolio, I talk to clients about this all the time. Get the core of your portfolio right. You do it as well. SAA, get TAA, get all that done. And what you do on the fringes is where you're interested, but not necessarily what really matters to the outcome. I don't know what it is about me, but for some reason when the stock has to be in the news for me to buy it, good or bad. And it's usually because it's bad and I see value. And maybe that's the way we do business as well. Try to find things that you can buy cheap. But honestly, I think there's a strategy. It's shown that it has worked in different periods, but it's like everything. There's no rule that it works. And I'm sure there's no rule that works every time it happens. Like dogs, the Dow has been done forever. Dingoes, I think that's probably negative towards dingoes. I think what you're referring to probably more importantly here is you're looking at value versus growth stocks, and that there is a role for both of them to play in a portfolio.
So when you're saying that poor performers, that's historically been, they've been a bit overlevered. They've had a bad period of returns. Maybe it's because they're cyclical, they're commodities, or exposed to a certain sector. So I think there's always, same as you're balancing everything else, having a balance between value and growth at the appropriate time makes some sense. But definitely don't deliberately buy last year's losers. Had a good chat with a fund manager yesterday, and he was talking about that the most of the lessons have been selling out of things too early or seeing more value than there actually was at the time. AMP was an example that he brought up, that after it fell, it looked, there was so much value there, but it's still waiting to be extracted.
Yeah. Drew, we've got to get your joke before you run off and get into some client meetings. But just quickly as a reminder to folks, you can send your questions in. There's a link in the show notes that says ask a question. Or if you want to try out the new RAS communities, you can head to community.ras.com.au. There's a link in the show notes for that too, as well as to get your copy of the Golden Years, Get It Right in Retirement. I think that's what it's called. And you can also take advantage of some other books that you might want to pick up from Major Street Publishing while you were there. Books like The Ulysses Contract or Evan Lucas's Mind Over Money or Kate Campbell's Buying Happiness. We do have some discounts that we can offer everyone for a couple of months. So go and check those out. We have some wonderful questions sent in today. We do apologize that we did cut it a little bit short today. If you did get your question on the show this week, you can write into us and we will send you a copy of Drew's book, however you want to do that. We did have some wonderful questions about where to put cash and all these types of things. We will get to them next week. Drew, we've got to get a dad joke from you, if you don't mind. And then we'll say good day to folks and have a wonderful weekend.
Here we go. I'm not singing. It's okay.
Forget the vocal. Oh.
What does a daddy buffalo say to his son when he left for work?
Something about hello.
Bye, son. Bye, son.
Oh, gosh, Drew. That's not bad. I'll give you a 7 out of 10 for that one.
Actually. Yeah, that was much better, yeah. Just don't overthink it. That's all I have to remind myself. Don't overthink the joke.
You can get in contact with Drew for more dad jokes at drew@waterpartners.com.au. There is a link in your show notes for financial planning. Drew, mate, an absolute pleasure. Can't wait to be back with you recording, hopefully in person next week. Bye for now.
Good to see you.
For more than a decade, I've been hunting for the best investors and their methods, strategies, and tools for investing. After years in the industry, countless books, a few degrees, and 1,000 podcasts and live shows, I've rolled this accumulated knowledge into something called Rask Invest. If you've ever heard me talk about a core and a satellite, active and passive, true long-term compounding, or you simply want to know exactly how I would invest, now is your chance. Rask Invest is our new investment service, designed for all types of investors who want professional management of their core portfolio at a low cost from a team they trust. Rask Invest helps you automate your wealth creation and passive income. Simply click the link that says Invest with Owen in your podcast player to join one of our live platform walkthroughs or book a call with us. You can also view the Rask Invest PDS and TMD and get invested with me.